You're listening to The Sound Off. The Sound Off. With the Solomonster. Solomonster.
Who's you wasting my time if you want to come into my office and talk this what trash to me? What do you want?
It's annoying, isn't it?
It is annoying. Just dress to impress, fist pump, and don't forget, take care, spike your hair.
Welcome to episode 164. You are listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is Father's Day, Sunday, June 19th, 2011. Happy Father's Day to all of the dads out there. I know we have a lot who listen to this show, and happy Father's Day to my own dad as well, who I'm sure is not listening to this show. Got a lot to get into here. It's Capital Punishment Sunday for WWE. By the time this is done recording, pay-per-view will almost be on, so I'm not even really going to get into too many thoughts on the card. You got R-Truth challenging John Cena for the WWE title. Randy Orton and Christian looks like it is a go for the World Heavyweight title. The Miz will battle Alex Riley, Big Show and Alberto Del Rio, Rey Mysterio and CM Punk. Kofi Kingston defends the Intercontinental title against Dolph Ziggler, or rather the U.S. title, I should say. And Wade Barrett will defend the Intercontinental title against Ezekiel Jackson. So that is the card. Before I start here, I just want to make a few comments about something completely unrelated. I'm not a huge fan of hockey, I'll admit that right off the bat. But obviously the entire world knows that the Boston Bruins beat the Vancouver Canucks to win the Stanley Cup. And they had a big celebration up in Boston, and up in Vancouver was anything but a celebration. Of course, these images and videos of rioting and looting in the streets, it looked like something out of a third world nation. And I saw one video in particular where people were looting shops and trying to break windows to stores, and there was this one guy who was trying to stop the looters. He was just trying to be a good Samaritan and talk some sense into people. And what he got for his troubles was an ass-kicking, as the entire crowd converged on him and proceeded to beat the living crap out of him until two people came over and tried to rescue him. And I've been to Canada before. I've never been to Vancouver. I've been to Toronto. I've been to Montreal. I've been to Niagara Falls. Not Vancouver. And the one thing I always noticed about the people up in Canada was how nice they are. You know, and it's a very nice country. It's a very pleasant place to go, unless you don't like the cold. And I don't want to generalize and judge, and apparently it was a group of anarchists, they say, who may have started all of this crap. All I can say is this, because this just disgusted me, seeing this, that if anybody listening to this show right now has ever participated in rioting or looting after a sporting event, do us all a favor and just kill yourself. Really, go ahead and kill yourself. I'll even give you a minute to go ahead and do it, because to me, To do something like that, you know, I've seen in this country, for example, I believe it was in L.A. A while back when the Lakers lost, and there were people overturning cars in the streets and setting fires. So it's not something that's limited just to Canada. It just so happens that it happened there, and it disgusted me. But it disgusts me whenever I read stories like this, because it's one thing to, be very serious about your sports team. You know, you're into it, you're very passionate about it. Passion can be a great thing, and passion can also be a really horrible thing. And I think that, you know, for example, if John Cena, you know, people joke all the time, you know, remember the ECW One Night Stand when Cena fought RVD, and there was that one guy with that sign that said, "If Cena wins, we riot." Now imagine if Cena did win that night instead of Rob Van Dam. What if Cena beat RVD at the ECW show in the Hammerstein and retained the title? If you had people here in New York City that actually did start rioting, I would say open fire for the NYPD. These are people that, quite frankly, we do not need in this world. And it just really made me mad. And I just had to make a comment about that. Because if you think about it from a pro wrestling perspective, imagine people pulling shit like this after a wrestling event. If their, you know, hated wrestler won, or if their favorite wrestler lost. It's just complete lunacy. And I can't believe that there are people in this world who take things to that level. And they really need to have their heads examined. Monday Night Raw was a 3-hour show last week. It was the Monday Night Raw All-Stars episode. And Stone Cold Steve Austin was the general manager for the night. I talked about how stupid that was last week, so I'm not going to get into that again. Just for a note here, Randy Orton suffered a concussion. It was a legit concussion in a match in Madrid, Spain, a week ago. And so on this particular show, Orton was not allowed to compete. There was no physical contact with him and Christian. There was some question as to whether or not he would be able to wrestle on the pay-per-view, although by the time you listen to this, I'm sure he will have already wrestled on the pay-per-view. And hopefully is less one World Heavyweight Championship, because I think in that case, Christian has now lost twice in a row to Randy Orton clean. And, you know, he's lost some other matches. And, you know, if you're going to keep this feud going or really build Christian back up into a respectable heel challenger, he's got to win at some point. So hopefully he did at Capital Punishment. But the other thing is John Cena is apparently hurting a lot more than WWE is letting on. Apparently he's nursing injuries to his neck, his elbow, his hip. And, you know, when I hear this, and there are people out there who hate Cena and will probably rejoice at this news. And again, I don't rejoice at the news of people getting hurt. I mean, that's just stupid. But WWE has to tread very carefully here. Because if Cena is banged up, like really banged up, and nobody works harder than he does on that roster. I mean, give him credit for that at least. I mean, the guy, I don't even know how many times a month the guy sees his own home. You know? It's just crazy, the schedule that he keeps up with all the WWE commitments and the charity commitments and the Make-A-Wish stuff and all that stuff. So, you know, the more that he's on the road, he doesn't get a chance to rest. He is the WWE champion, at least at the time I'm recording this. WWE has to keep in mind that they've got a big, big, big money match already set for WrestleMania next year with him and The Rock. And this is just, this just has disaster written all over it if Cena is not given a chance to kind of recharge the batteries at some point, because you just know that if you don't give this guy a rest, that come January or something like that, he's going to tear something or something's going to happen, and that WrestleMania match is flushed down the toilet, and that would be pretty bad. So, you know, if I'm WWE, if Cena is still the champion, let's say heading into SummerSlam, heading into a possible match with Alberto Del Rio, hypothetically speaking, perhaps he loses the championship. Give him 2 months, 3 months at the most, out of action. You could do an injury angle where Del Rio not only wins the title and is moved up to that next level, but perhaps he, you know, quote, breaks Cena's arm. You know, he puts him in the cross arm bar at the pay-per-view, or maybe the next night on Raw, doesn't let go, breaks his arm. It gives Cena 2 or 3 months to rest and hopefully heal up, so he doesn't suffer a more serious injury. And at the same time, you've now made Del Rio into a real monster and given him a chance to run with the championship. You know, and if WWE wants to put the belt back on Cena in time for WrestleMania, you've still got plenty of months to do it. So if I'm them, that's something that I would consider doing. But that could be a really bad story for them if they don't give Cena a chance to heal up. Anyway, as for the show itself, I thought that, to no surprise, Steve Austin was fantastic in the opening segment, especially his back and forth with The Miz. But the problem here is that Miz looked like an idiot, you know, much as he has against Alex Riley over the last couple of weeks. Now, you know, even if he beat Alex Riley at the Capital Punishment pay-per-view, his stock has really fallen since losing the title. And, you know, he's got to man up real fast. He has not looked very tough, you know, running away from people like Austin and getting the shit kicked out of him by really a guy in Alex Riley, who I think there's a lot of potential there. But even Alex Riley, for months and months, was booked as nothing more than a lackey and almost like a jobber to The Miz. And so they've got to do something to rehabilitate The Miz. Big Show sprinting to the ring to attack Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez was amazing. It's not because Show is running, although I have not seen him run that fast, I think, ever. But because his leg was ran over by a car only 3 weeks ago. I mean, I couldn't believe that they had him run to the ring without showing any ill effects of that injury whatsoever. You know, you go through the trouble of doing a car accident angle, which, like I've said before, I think those are stupid. I would ban them. I mean, if I were running WWE, there would be no car accident angles. They're just too hokey. They're too over the top. They happen way too often. I wouldn't do them at all, but, you know, to have him just run to the ring and as if nothing ever happened, what's the point? What's the point of even doing it in the first place? Now, having said that, his beatdown on Ricardo was great. Just great. I mean, he showed a fire and intensity in beating him up with those punches that I want to see more of in WWE. I mean, it felt real. It felt uncomfortable, which was a good thing given the circumstances. Again, Big Show should be pissed that this guy ran him over. You know, Big Show wasn't out there smiling and smirking and cracking jokes at the end of the segment either. You know, Kane tried to pull him off. He put him in a sleeper hold. You know, this guy wanted to kill somebody. He wanted to maim somebody. And I think we need to see more of that in main event angles. You know, if you want to make the mid-card angles a joke, fine. I don't like that idea, but your main event angles should have intensity and passion like this. It shouldn't have John Cena out there cutting a comedy promo on Miz or on R-Truth or whatever, you know, whoever the flavor of the week is. John Morrison was brought back on this show only for another injury angle, which to me must mean that he's hurt more than they're letting on. It could just be a situation where he needs a couple of extra weeks to heal up from the neck surgery, but why fly him in all the way for the show just to do that when you could have just kept him off TV for a couple of more weeks and built to a surprise return? You know, if R-Truth doesn't win the title at the pay-per-view, you could just as easily have had Morrison interfere, you know, and run down as a surprise. So, I don't know. It doesn't sound too good to me. But R-Truth continued to shine here. But the one thing I'm starting to worry is that they're getting a little over the top with his act. I mean, just the nature of his act, he is over the top. But I don't want them to, you know, take this to a level where he truly is nothing more than a cartoon character. Because if this is the guy challenging for the title, you know, and wrestling John Cena in the main event of a pay-per-view, people have to take him seriously. And I think they do. You know, is this crazy, unpredictable guy. You don't know what he's going to do next. He put Morrison out of action. He kicked the shit out of the midget. But, you know, let's hope they don't go too over the top with this. Christian and Rey Mysterio. This had just a terrible finish with Christian choking. You know, this is the thing. They did a match earlier in the show with Del Rio and Kane, where Del Rio would not let go of the cross armbar. And so the ref counted to five. He didn't break. And he was disqualified. And so in this match, you have a similar ending where Christian is, you know, beating up Rey Mysterio. And the referee counts. And, you know, Christian is just ignoring the ref. And Christian gets DQ'd. Which would have been shitty to begin with, but it was made all the worse by the fact they did the exact same thing earlier in the show. I mean, do these agents not converse with one another backstage? This is ridiculous. Anyway, Christian and Mysterio could have had a much better match. I was very disappointed. Roddy Piper was on the show, since it is an all-star edition of Raw, and he looked good on Piper's Pit. You know, physically, he's gotten himself in much better shape than he used to be in. You know, even 3 years ago when I saw him in person in the Royal Rumble at Madison Square Garden, I mean, he had a gut. He's had a gut for a long time, and perhaps he still does, but it's less of a gut than he had before, so kudos to him. But it's too bad they did this Piper's Pit segment with Miz and Riley here, since that probably means it's less likely that they'll do one of these with Cena and The Rock at SummerSlam, which I had suggested a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Piper went on Twitter a while back and said he'd love to have Cena and Rock on Piper's Pit, which would be great. I think SummerSlam would be a good place for it, only because, you know, WWE apparently wants to get Rock on the pay-per-view, and he's not going to wrestle. So we've seen The Rock host a show, which was pretty boring. So why not do something with The Rock? And I think the best thing you could do, I mean, a Piper's Pit segment hyped up for pay-per-view with Rock being there going, you know, face-to-face with Cena, you know, could bring more people in to buy the SummerSlam show just by Rock's name being attached to it. And I'm not saying Cena won't wrestle. Cena should and probably will be in the main event, but you could do a Piper's Pit earlier in the show. So, and maybe they still will, but after this, probably not. Anyway, this whole thing led to a challenge being thrown down where Miz said that he would put $1,000 of his money on the line in a match against Hot Rod, which, by the way, I hear is another name being used for Anthony Weiner. Piper said he'd do it for $5,000. And then Steve Austin popped up, and he made the match with both men putting $5,000 on the line. And he made Alex Riley the guest referee. I mean, that hardly seemed fair to The Miz. He never agreed to that. So, of course, Miz lost because, well, why not? I guess it was supposed to build more heat between him and Riley heading into the pay-per-view, but Miz should look strong at least once, no? Anybody? Hello? I guess not. We had an amazing segment here with the 14 Diva tag team match. You had Kelly Kelly, Eve Torres, Natalya, Beth Phoenix, Caitlyn, and AJ, the Forgotten Faces from NXT, against Maryse, Alicia Fox, Melina, the Bella Twins, Rosa Mendez, and Tamina. And I think the combined time that it took for these women to come down to the ring probably was double the amount of time that the match actually went on for. 14 women came to the ring, 2 got inside, and if you blinked, it was over. When Kelly pinned Rosa, it was literally 30 seconds. This is the state of the WWE Women's Division. I actually feel sorry for these ladies. I mean, it's not their fault that their time is always getting cut by the bozos in the back. So, you know, I guess on a 3-hour show, they didn't have time for 5 minutes here. So, sucks to be them. The interplay between Steve Austin and CM Punk was easily the best thing on the entire show. Punk mocking Austin, by the way, on how annoying the what chants are. And it was amazing. It made me sad, actually, that we're never going to see a match between these two. I'm convinced that, you know, Austin just is he's true to form when he says that he ain't wrestling again. And, I mean, who knows? I once said on the Sound Off that when I was asked, what are the chances that Rock would ever face John Cena in a match? And I said that there was a 0% chance of that happening. So who knows? But anyway, Punk would just be the perfect foil for Austin. Just perfect. Austin came out to announce another 3-hour Raw next week.
No! Oh, please, God, no!
Which will basically be a free TV version of Cyber Sunday. The fans get to make the matches, they get to pick the stipulations. I was also amused when he made that crack Austin did about the crowds usually being tough at Nassau Coliseum. Raw was at the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, New York. And I thought it was funny because, A, it's true, and B, I don't know if I've ever shared this on the Sound Off before, but I remember being at a Raw taping at Nassau Coliseum years ago when Paul Heyman was still announcing with JR, so it might have been 2001. It would have had to have been 2001. And during one of the commercial breaks, Heyman gets up and grabs the microphone and basically says that this crowd sucks. It's the worst crowd that they've ever performed in front of. Just completely burying Long Island and just everyone in the building. I mean, it was something else. I've never seen something like that before. And you know, in fairness, the Coliseum crowds, you know, they're not always bad, but they do tend to react only to certain things. So I guess they kind of have that reputation for a reason. I just didn't expect Austin to actually say something about it on TV. Anyway, the anonymous Raw GM dinged in at this point repeatedly to the point of absurdity, quite frankly, until Austin could take no more. He grabbed the laptop, poured beer all over it, and ran it over with his ATV. I'm sure if they take it to the Genius Bar at the Apple Store, they can take care of that pretty quickly. They had a Did You Know fact on the screen that said, and I quote, "Last night on USA, over 10 million viewers watched Tough Enough and Raw." Now, mind you, this aired on Monday, and apparently the night before, 10 million people watched Tough Enough and Raw. I didn't realize those two shows aired on Sundays now. That was quite the little fuck-up right there. CM Punk pinned John Cena in the main event with a go-to sleep, a rare occurrence, although it came after R-Truth popped up in the crowd and distracted Cena by threatening to spit water in some little kid's face. The crowd was on fire during this match. I just talked about Long Island not having the greatest crowd, but say what you want to about John Cena. I've never, you know, said a bad word about the fact that this guy gets a reaction. You know, it may not be the reaction that ideally WWE wants for their top babyface, but I mean, this crowd came alive during this match with dueling chants of "Let's go Cena," "Let's go Punk," and you know, "Cena sucks." It really made it feel like something special, even though it was just another match. Now, a word about Zack Ryder. Apparently, a lot of WWE talents were pretty upset, as I think many fans were, that Zack Ryder was not on Raw on Monday night. You know, Zack Ryder is a native of Long Island, New York. That's what he's known for. And it was pretty well known that if Ryder were on Raw last week, he was going to get a big reaction. In fact, perhaps the biggest reaction of anybody on the show because hometown advantage, hometown crowd. And he's done a very good job of getting himself over to a small audience on the internet all by himself through no help of WWE. So a lot of talents were very upset that Ryder was left off the show completely. I mean, Ryder had a match on Raw only 2 or 3 weeks ago, an actual match against Kofi Kingston. And before that, he was popping up on Raw almost every week in cameos with John Cena. So, of course, on a 3-hour show from his hometown of Long Island, he makes not one appearance on the entire show. I mean, there were We Want Ryder chants all night long, apparently, in the building. Not only on TV, but even during the commercial breaks. And apparently, when the chants came on TV, I was not aware of this, but WWE actually lowered the sound to make them less noticeable. You know, isn't it funny? It's just funny to me how WWE seems to hate the internet so much. They just hate it. Vince McMahon just hates it. Yet they don't seem to have a problem making money off of it, which I find to be just a tad bit hypocritical. Anyway, after the show on Monday night, I went on Twitter at twitter.com/Solomonster, by the way, cheap plug. And I said that Ryder was left off the show out of fear. Fear that he would get over more than their own stars on the show. And I fully believe that. I really do. And you know, I cannot tell you how many times I have heard guys like Triple H and Steve Austin and Jim Ross in his fucking barbecue blogs talking about how these young guys have to work to get themselves over. They can't just wait around for something to happen. You gotta get yourself over. Right? Isn't that what they all say? You gotta get yourself over. And then you see a guy like Zack Ryder, who was tired of sitting around and not getting anywhere, and he decided to be proactive. He's gonna take the bull by the horns and get himself over. Because, damn it, that's what he has to do. And he's done, to, you know, a certain degree with a certain segment of the wrestling population. He has done that. More people watch his Long Island Ice Z videos on YouTube than they do most of the videos that WWE puts on their own YouTube channel, which I'm sure is embarrassing for the company. So maybe, just maybe, if you give the guy a push on TV, whatever is working with the internet audience might actually translate to a larger audience and create a new star. I don't ever want to hear JR talk about how these guys need to get off their butt and get themselves over. I just don't. I mean, if I hear him say that again, I might just have to buy a bottle of his barbecue sauce just so I can smash it over his head and strangle him with a piece of his beef jerky. I don't want to hear him say that again, because this is a classic example of what bullshit that is. Just complete bullshit. Chris Jericho wrote on Twitter, he said, it was so lame that WWE didn't include Zack Ryder on Raw. He said there was no reason not to. Wrestling is supposed to be fun. Yeah, wrestling is supposed to be fun, but apparently WWE is no longer in the business of wrestling. Anyway, that was Raw from Monday night. I was not very happy with that show. Zack Ryder thing aside, it just wasn't a great show. When a 2-minute backstage segment between CM Punk and Steve Austin building to a match we're never going to see is the best part of the entire show. Yeah, it wasn't a great show. Some talent releases to talk about in WWE. They let go a couple of people this past week. They released Michael Tarver, most notably, who was, of course, part of NXT Season 1. He was part of the big Nexus invasion a year ago. And most well-known to me for botching a whole bunch of different things, including on the very night that Nexus debuted on Raw and just trashed the entire ringside area, and each guy took turns beating up John Cena. The one scene where Cena is in the middle of the ring on his knees, and Daniel Bryan is yelling at him saying, you know, you think you're better than me, you think you're better than me, and it's like an internet wrestling fan's wet dream to see Daniel Bryan talking shit to John Cena, and just as he goes to deliver a roundhouse kick to the head, Michael Tarver, you know, all the Nexus guys were kind of circling and just surrounding the ring, and they were going to give Daniel Bryan the chance to do his thing and kick Cena in the head. And Michael Tarver thinks that this is the perfect time for him to go in, to lunge in, and go for a punch on John Cena, just as Daniel Bryan is going to deliver a kick. And, you know, Daniel Bryan basically told him, get the fuck away, and he had to redo the spot all over again. And I'll never forget that. But Yeah, the guy was let go. Jacob Novak was let go as well. And Novak was part of the most recent cast on NXT and had a little bit of a feud with William Regal before he was eliminated first from the season. Let's see what we got here. Wes Briscoe was... his name was removed from the FCW roster page. I have not seen confirmation that he was actually one of the people let go. It would surprise me if he was, because he's the son of Gerald Briscoe, and usually they give those second and third generation guys more of an opportunity if they're not advancing as quickly. Although I never heard anything like that about Wes Briscoe, so perhaps he's still around, but... a couple of other developmental guys, Buddy Stretcher and Buck Dixon and Ethan Levine, were also released. And on the other hand, Trevor Murdoch is telling people that he is on his way back to WWE. So I guess we'll find out in due time if that is true. Val Venus once said that he was coming back to WWE as well, and I don't believe they ever did anything with him. Now, on the flip side of all of this, some other very interesting news. Regarding the former Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, the Kings of Wrestling, probably the greatest tag team in all of wrestling right now, which is not saying much, because certainly when it comes to the biggest promotion in the world, WWE, their tag division has never been worse than it is right now. But you do have some great teams in TNA, Ring of Honor, and other indie promotions. And to me, based on what I've seen, Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli are the most entertaining, cohesive tag team out there. They're just great at what they do. They have fantastic chemistry together. And apparently both men were invited to work out in the ring with WWE officials before both the Raw and SmackDown tapings this past week. And, you know, regarding the two guys, apparently both of their Ring of Honor contracts expired in April. So technically they would be free agents to take an outside offer, which is interesting only because Sinclair Broadcasting, who of course just purchased Ring of Honor, word on the street is that on June 26th, so next weekend, Ring of Honor has a big internet pay-per-view show here in New York City. I will not be there, unfortunately, but it is taking place at the Manhattan Center. And supposedly, the people from Sinclair will be there, and they will want to sign people to contracts who are not already signed to long-term deals. It's kind of do or die. You're either going to sign or you're not. And if you don't sign... your days in ROH are probably numbered, because Sinclair is not going to put you on TV on their new show if they don't have a long-term commitment from you. So I think something will break very quickly regarding Hero and Claudio. They're either going to get offers from WWE and take them, or they're going to sign with Ring of Honor probably for a couple of years. It would be disastrous for Ring of Honor if they lost both guys. I mean, if they lost one of them, it would be a pretty bad deal. But to lose both guys, if that happened... to WWE would just be an utter disaster. Especially with that new TV deal taking shape. You know, that new TV show goes on the air in September, and I think Claudio and Chris Hero would be two very big parts of that show. And if they lost both guys, you know, ROH's loss would be WWE's gain, but it's such a weird thing, because under ordinary circumstances, I would be hoping and wishing and practically begging WWE to sign them because of how entertaining they are. I would love to see them on my TV every Monday or every Friday, but I can't do it. I can't bring myself to do it because I have completely lost faith in WWE's ability to get over new stars. And moreover, if they bring them in as a tag team, then forget about it, because who on the roster is there for them to face? Nexus? Kane and Big Show? I almost don't want them to sign with WWE. I mean, I want them, you know, I want them to make more money and I want them to get an opportunity and all that, but selfishly as a fan, I don't want them to sign with WWE because I have no faith in them whatsoever. In the company, that is, not in the wrestlers. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there. And, you know, maybe WWE won't even offer them a deal. Maybe they'll look at them and say, you know what, these guys don't know how to work. Or God help us all if they actually signed them and sent both guys down to developmental and gave them new names. I don't even want to speculate what names they would give those two guys. By the way, for the one guy who was asking me, I think his name was Frank a couple weeks ago, he was desperate to know what the name of WWE September pay-per-view was going to be, because that was the one month on the schedule that WWE did not have a name for its pay-per-view. And apparently they have decided to resurrect Night of Champions. It looked like they had gotten rid of that show, and apparently not. So Night of Champions will now take place in September. Talk some TNA news here really quick. Mr. Anderson is the new TNA champion. He beat Sting at the Slammiversary pay-per-view last week. And on Impact Wrestling this past week, apparently, and I did not see the show because I haven't seen a lot of TV this week, really. I've been out. I've been, just not able to see it. But from what I've heard, Impact Wrestling actually was pretty good this past week by normal Impact standards. They had more wrestling on the show, which is good since your show is now called Impact Wrestling. Probably a good idea to get more wrestling on the show. And there were a couple of returns. I think there was a triple threat match that involved Austin Aries and Jimmy Rave. And Austin Aries went over. Apparently earned himself a TNA contract. I guess they're not going to be calling him Austin Starr anymore. This could be the last hurrah for Austin Aries, by the way. I know he's been very disillusioned. You know, he was very upset that he tried out for Tough Enough and was not chosen to be on the show. I don't think he burned a bridge with Ring of Honor, but I don't think he left the promotion on the best of terms. And so he's been wrestling with other promotions, I think, either Dragon Gate or Evolve. But, good for him. Hopefully, if he is back in TNA, he'll get a shot because he's definitely a great worker. I don't think anybody would say a bad word about Austin Aries as a worker. But, the clock is ticking for him. Desmond Wolfe was released by TNA, finally, this past week. Former Ring of Honor champion Nigel McGuinness went to TNA. They rebranded him as Desmond Wolfe. This, of course, came after WWE refused to sign him, something they saw during the physical that they gave him. TNA snatched him right up, as they are known to do. And he had some great matches with Kurt Angle. You know, I went to the TNA house show at, here in Brooklyn at the baseball stadium a year ago, and there was a match between Kurt Angle and Desmond Wolfe that was just complete garbage compared to all the other matches they had, but even on this show, they had the best match. They just had pretty good chemistry together. And, he's been sidelined for many months now with a health issue of some sort that has prevented him from wrestling. And he was last seen just a couple of weeks ago being appointed the TNA Explosion Commissioner on their Explosion show, which was setting up a tournament on that show. And now they just decide to get rid of him. A little bit odd that they finally brought him back in some role only to let him go after all this time. Why did they let him go, 2 months ago? I don't know. But and I'm not going to speculate on what the issue is. You know, I've heard some people say perhaps it's a hepatitis C issue. There's been, even Sean Waltman is battling Hep C, and which is spread by blood. And a lot of wrestlers probably are carrying the disease and don't even know it. I don't know if Desmond Wolfe is one of those people. It just puzzles me. I can't quite figure out what the issue could be other than that. And he's gone now, and I don't see WWE taking him, especially if there is an issue there. Supposedly he's gotten into sitcom writing. So perhaps he's looking to life outside of wrestling. So whatever he does, best of luck to him. So there was a controversy over the week involving Jesse Neal. Let's call it the Jesse Neal food stamp controversy on Twitter. He went on Twitter, or him and his girlfriend did, I guess, and they were tweeting about how excited they were that they had just been accepted, they qualified for food stamps. And I guess a lot of people at first thought that he was just kidding around. You know, there's been a lot of jokes made about what some of the TNA mid-card and lower-card guys make, which is crap. And, just somebody like Jesse Neal is certainly not making Kurt Angle money, nor should he be. But nonetheless, you would think that these are guys, even if they're in the mid-card, who are performing on a nationally televised wrestling show. You know, TNA is paid millions each year by Spike TV to host Impact Wrestling. And even the lower-card guys in WWE make a pretty good living for themselves. And with merchandise, if they can get themselves over, like a Zack Ryder, who apparently his t-shirt is selling pretty well, there's the potential to make even more money. And apparently that's not the case in TNA. And Jesse Neal went back and forth with these people on Twitter and said, it's not a joke, he's not fucking around, that he was being honest, he was being truthful when he said that. And I think since then his Twitter page was taken down. I don't know if it's back up now or not, but this illustrates yet another issue with Dixie Carter and TNA. For all the people that sometimes will say, well, Dixie Carter's problem is that maybe she doesn't have a mind for the business, but she's a really nice person, and she's very loyal. And I don't doubt that Dixie is loyal to certain people. I mean, For fuck's sake, the fact that Vince Russo is still employed by that company and is seemingly bulletproof is proof positive that this woman is loyal to a fault. But loyalty only goes so far. How loyal really are you being to your employees when some of them have to go on food stamps to support themselves? I cannot believe that somebody who is on a show like Impact that airs nationally to millions of people, well, 1.5 million, but nonetheless, on television every week. You know, and Jesse Neal is not a job guy. Jesse Neal is a classic mid-card guy. He's not a main eventer, but, you know, he's on TV and has had some measure of success and has really come a long way since he first appeared on television. He's really upped his game and gotten into his character and all of that. And, first of all, he was an idiot for going on Twitter and admitting anything like that. Why would you go on Twitter? What would possess a person, whether you're a wrestler or if you're a day laborer or whatever you are, why would you go on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that and tell the world that you're so excited because you just got qualified for food stamps? That's like going on Twitter and saying, wow, you know, the homeless shelter that I moved into is really nice. They've got extra space. I mean, a lot of people are going through tough times like that, but to go on Twitter and just kind of announce that to the world, to me, was pretty fucking stupid. And I'm sure, you know, he had to have known that TNA would not be thrilled with it. I don't know if he's, you know, going to be punished or reprimanded in some way, or if perhaps the Twitter page was taken down because TNA kind of told him, hey, you better take that shit down. But it does not reflect well on TNA and, again, their deplorable treatment of talent, which is not universal. I'm not saying that everybody who works for TNA is treated like shit. Mick Foley, who just left TNA, put a whole blog up about, you know, asking the question, really was working for TNA so bad? You know, there were a lot of perks that he got by working for TNA. I'm sure the perks that Mick Foley got are not the same perks that a lot of the mid-card guys enjoy or don't enjoy. So, just another black eye for the company, and I can't say that I'm really surprised, but I am surprised that Jesse Neal would go on Twitter and say something so stupid. Twitter is going to be the downfall of civilization. Twitter has already been the downfall of a lot of athletes and wrestlers and politicians, but not me. Solomonster, Twitter's actually great for me. Twitter.com/Solomonster, by the way, in case I didn't already mention that. one last quick note here. Drew Carey was on The Price is Right, as he is, of course, every week since he is the host. What I meant was, WWE sent Kelly Kelly and the Bella Twins to appear on an episode of The Price is Right, which they did, I believe, on Tuesday. And Drew Carey, on that show, thanked the women at the end, apparently, and said that they, quote, were going to be inducted into The Price is Right Hall of Fame, but in the wrestling wing, so the fans don't get upset. I thought that was pretty funny. And I'm not a big fan of Drew Carey. I mean, I'm sure he's a really nice guy. I mean, compared to Bob Barker, nobody was ever going to fill Bob Barker's shoes as the host of that show. And I still like Price is Right. I mean, I don't have a chance to watch it since I work and do not have DVR. But I was never a huge fan of Drew Carey's comedy. You know, I was a big fan of Whose Line Is It Anyway when that show was on, but it wasn't his comedy. It was the comedy of the other people on the show. And I know he has a new show on Game Show Network. I had somebody write in to me actually telling me that it was actually worth watching. It was pretty funny. That was really probably the reason he accepted the invite into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, because part of the deal was they plugged his new shows. I believe it's called Drew Carey's Improvaganza is the name of it. And the only problem is I used to have Game Show Network here on Cablevision in New York, and then those Nazi bastards decided to take the channel away and add it to their sports and entertainment package. So I have to pay extra. I have to pay like an extra $6 or $8 a month for Game Show Network. Yeah, I don't think so. It's not going to happen. But I thought that was a pretty funny joke, so there you go. All right, so let's break back into the mailbag here. I know this is the favorite segment for a lot of you each week. This comes from Joel. It says, Happy Father's Day, Solomonster. I hope I'm not a father. Jesus, that would be terrible. I'm getting deployed next week, and I'm hoping that wherever the Navy sends me, I'll be able to download the sound off. Have a question. We all know that Triple H and The Undertaker had the best match at WrestleMania this year, My question is, did either of these men have any warm-up matches beforehand to test their bodies? I don't believe Undertaker wrestled before Mania. I mean, he is in such a condition where you have to be very sparse with his matches, and it's to the point where he really only wrestles on those big matches. I mean, he can't afford to do much else at this point. But Triple H, I'm pretty sure, wrestled at least once. I believe he wrestled, if I remember correctly, there was a Madison Square Garden house show here in New York, maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the show. And I think he wrestled Sheamus in a 20-minute street fight. So he at least had one match. Undertaker, I don't believe, had any. Russell from London in the UK writes in, two questions here. Do you know what happened to the talk of that new wrestling federation starting up, the one in Florida, that had claims of already signing up to 50 wrestlers, including X-Pac and Vader? Can't remember the details, but there was something about the owner of a football team running it. Does this ring any bell? Yeah, it pretty much fell apart, pretty much like a lot of people thought it would. There were a lot of people who were either signed to contracts or they had some sort of verbal agreement to join the promotion, and they were all gung-ho about it, and then things just kind of fell apart. I think it was a financial issue. Somebody backed out, as is usually the case, and a lot of the wrestlers, of course, it's not like it came as a big shock to them, because things like this happen all the time. It's a shame, though, just because it would have been a great opportunity for some guys to be employed, you know, outside the auspices of WWE or TNA, and it just fell apart. And the other question he has here says, you also mentioned about main event talent not putting over younger guys clean. I recall about 2 years ago, Undertaker putting Vladimir Kozlov over via pinfall on SmackDown. This is a perfect example of their booking paradox. The rare time a new guy is put over clean, it's someone who clearly is not ready for it. Thus, things don't work out, and they become even more scared of letting their big stars give away victories. That is a great, great point. I could not have said it better myself. I remember that, actually. And I remember not only did Kozlov pin Undertaker, but it was kind of, I remember it being out of nowhere. It wasn't like he did anything big to the Undertaker. He just kind of, he did a move and just, he just beat him. You know, 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring. And, you know, I'll do you one even better. Not only is that a great example of their booking paradox, where they take these green, you know, jacked up guys in some cases who clearly are not ready and have no business going over main event guys, but those are the guys that they pick to beat their main eventers clean. They did it with Kozlov and The Undertaker, and they did it with Great Khali and The Undertaker, if you remember. Khali beat Undertaker, I believe it was on a pay-per-view, might have been Judgment Day a couple of years ago. He beat him clean. I think he beat him clean with the brain chop, as a matter of fact. And I don't know anybody that will sit there and say that Khali was ready for a big push. And you're absolutely right. They put the wrong guys over, so when they inevitably fail and they don't succeed, well, their argument is, well, we've tried it before and it doesn't work, so we're not going to put anybody else over. it's that self-fulfilling prophecy, as they say. You know, they want it to be true. I think they want, you know, they want to believe that they've really tried and they failed, and so therefore they're not going to do it. They really, honestly, that's what they want. And so they talk it into themselves. And, of course, the funny thing is that if you do that and you don't put younger guys over, then they're not going to get over if you don't give them the chance. You know, if they would have done something like that instead of with Kozlov or Khali, if they would have done something similar with, let's say, Daniel Bryan or even Miz, you know, a year ago, before we started getting all those fluky victories, then maybe it would have meant something. But you're absolutely right. Gary writes in, says, do you think there will be anyone from the current and next generation of wrestlers that will somewhere down the line be old and bitter and irrelevantly sling mud about guys they haven't worked with for 15 years or more, like the Ultimate Warrior, Iron Sheik, and to a degree, superstar Billy Graham? If so, who do you suspect? Well, the next generation of wrestlers, I have no idea. I don't even know who they are. But as far as current wrestlers, let's say Matt Hardy. I think Matt Hardy, it's safe to say, will still be doing videos 30 years from now, and when he's old and senile, and maybe at that point they'll actually be entertaining, because I don't find many of his videos now to be entertaining. But yeah, Matt Hardy I could easily see in that role. Matt writes in, what happened with Teddy Hart in WWE? What was it about his behavior or attitude that led to his release from the company? Is he still an active wrestler, or has he truly been blackballed by the industry? I believe he is still wrestling in Mexico, I believe. Or at least he was at one point for AAA with Jack Evans. But, you know, what was it that caused him to be released or blackballed? It was his attitude, and it was the fact that he had a chip on his shoulder. He thought he was better than everybody else, and he would do these spots. He was like a spot monkey, which is not to say he wasn't a good worker, but he would do these spots, and that had no context to them, and they didn't fit in the context of the match, and he would go out of his way to make everybody else look inferior to him, when the real goal is to make yourself look good by making both you and your opponent look good. And I don't think he ever really understood that. And, you pull that shit in WWE, and you're going to get a bad reputation very fast. And I still remember, it was in Ring of Honor, I believe, years ago, there was some sort of match, and Teddy Hart did a spot off the top of a cage onto people down below that they were not expecting. I mean, he did something that just really pissed people off. And they said, Teddy Hart will never compete in Ring of Honor again. I mean, he just really got under people's skin. And part of it also was that he was told not to do these things, and he just didn't listen. So not only does he go into business for himself, he's got a piss-poor attitude, but he ignores the promoter and the booker when they tell him and ask him to do things. And, those three things together, you're not going to get work in too many of the big promotions. And so that's the reason why. I mean, Teddy Hart had an in. He had an in with WWE. You know, when Bret Hart, the whole Hart dynasty, he was going to be a part of that. And the reason he wasn't was because he has a reputation. So it's really nobody's fault but his own. Kane writes in with an interesting email here that I wanted to share with all of you. He sent his thoughts in on why he thinks PG should stay in WWE. This past Tuesday, I went around to my sister's house and watched Monday Night Raw with my 6-year-old nephew. This, in the last few months, has become a regular thing for us. It started about 5 months ago when I was looking after him while watching Raw. He sat next to me watching this thing he had never seen before and got submersed in it. Within minutes, he decided that The Miz was a horrible man and should go away. He also clapped his hands together while willing John Cena to his feet. Now, 5 months on, I watch Raw live at 2 a.m. on Mondays. I'm in the UK. Then on Tuesday evening, I take the trip to my sister's and watch it all over again with my nephew, although it frustrates me when I watch it alone since I enjoy it much more with him. The last few weeks have been the best yet, as I explain who The Rock, Steve Austin, Macho Man, Jim Ross, and many others are. He now dons the full John Cena gear every time he goes out, and although Cena bores me, I now like it when he wins, as it makes my nephew go to bed happy. As I am now in the main role model in his life since his dad left, this experience has really helped us to bond, and whenever I arrive at his house, he runs and gives me a hug and proclaims, "The champ is here!" This, for me, is why PG is a good thing. Although I, like all, believe a little blood wouldn't hurt every now and then, and a little more edgy content should be added, I am fine with the way that it is, as it means me and my nephew have a common bond and have left, have a lot of stuff to talk about. It reminds me so much of when I was his age and fell in love with wrestling, so PG should stay. So that's, I've heard that from a couple of different people, and it's one of those things where you've got two different perspectives. You know, from the perspective perhaps of a younger person or a person who is in their 20s or early 30s who lived through the Attitude Era and really loved it, you can see why somebody like John Cena would make them gag. But to people who have a younger nephew or have a younger sibling or have a child of their own. I've heard that from a lot of people who listen to the show who are dads, perhaps new dads, and they want their kids to watch wrestling, but they don't necessarily want their kids to watch wrestling as it was 12 years ago. And, there's two sides to every argument, and that was Kane's side of it. So thank you for sharing that with us here. Corbin writes into the show, been a listener since episode 138. Have you ever realized that Dolph Ziggler is a former member of the Spirit Squad? He is also a former World Tag Team Champion, but WWE only recognizes him as a World Heavyweight and Intercontinental Champion. Do you think he should be realized for it, and do you think he ever will be? I think he should. Absolutely. I mean, you've had plenty of guys that have been one character at one point in their WWE career, and they've returned at some point with a different character, and you still acknowledge their past. I mean, maybe one of the more classic examples of it was the Iron Sheik, who quite famously was WWF champion, albeit for a month or two. And when he came back years later with that awful Colonel Mustafa gimmick, he was part of the Triangle of Terror with Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan. This was back in 91. They never outright said. I mean, maybe I recall Roddy Piper on commentary, perhaps at one point, did mention that he was the Iron Sheik at one point. They would kind of allude to it, but wouldn't necessarily refer to him as the Iron Sheik. They called him Colonel Mustafa, but they did refer to him on at least one occasion that I can remember. I think when he entered the Royal Rumble as a former WWF champion. So if you had somebody who perhaps was not familiar with the Iron Sheik, and they saw Colonel Mustafa, and here's this guy that they're calling a former WWF champion, it probably left you scratching your head. But they did acknowledge it. So if they can acknowledge it then, they can acknowledge it now. I still have just a lot of trouble wrapping my brain around the fact that Dolph is considered a former world heavyweight champion. Not because I don't think he deserves it. I did many shows here in the past when Dolph was first getting that big push on SmackDown, advocating for the push and saying that he should get a shot, you know? He should get a run with the title. You know, he was exceeding expectations in the company. He really, you know, was going above and beyond, and he had some a string of great matches at the time. But the way they handle that whole thing, you know, the guy's first world title reign is like a footnote. I don't even know that he ever physically had possession of the belt. It was just a completely fluky thing. And the fact that they even recognize him as a world champion is kind of goofy to me. The Juice Man, Cordell Mitchell from Chicago, writes in. He's a Twitter follower, Facebook follower, and Sound Off follower since episode 105. First ever question is this. If you had Stone Cold, The Rock, and The Macho Man in the ring at the same time, cutting promos, who would have the edge? This is such an unfair question. First of all, it depends, you know, are they cutting promos on each other? Is it, like, tough enough where they're just coming and doing their own promos, you know, but they all happen to be in the ring at the same time? I mean, if you had a three-way promo battle in the ring between Savage, you know, Rock and Austin, all in their prime, it's impossible. I can't pick a winner. I mean, they all are such great promos. You know, Austin, and I'll tell you what's so great about each one. Austin is perhaps the very best that I've ever seen at cutting a promo in a style that makes it sound like he's not even cutting a promo. It just looks like, here's this guy who's just like any other guy. You know, Austin's character was that he was the everyman. That's why people got behind him so much. And, you know, he wore black boots, black tights. He kept it very simple. He went in there. He knew his job was to beat the crap out of people. He beat the crap out of his boss. And so a lot of fans live vicariously through him for that. But when he cut a promo, even today, it sounds like it's genuine. Like, if he doesn't like you, this is what he thinks about you. He's not going to take shit from anybody. And he's very, very good at that. The Rock, who is in a league all by himself, is a special case because he can cut promos in a variety of different ways. You know, perhaps there is nobody better at the, quote, comedy promo than The Rock. And I don't mean comedy promo like John Cena, who is not funny at all. You know, even if The Rock is given bad content, I think he could even make it good. I mean, he will cut a promo on somebody and insult them and hurl one-liners at them, but it's genuinely funny. It is really funny. And if you wanted The Rock to cut a serious promo, which he's done before, he can do that too. You know, The Rock, you know, he can go out there and, you know, let's say that he's in a feud with somebody and, you know, they turned on him or they really beat the crap out of him or made, you know, a mockery out of him. The Rock could come out there with a passion and a fire and an intensity that, again, very few people have and almost nobody has today and can make you believe that he's really going to kick the crap out of this person and lay the smack down. So The Rock can cut any number of types of promos. He's very good at that. Savage, you know, much like Warrior, Savage could come off and often would come off as being just batshit crazy. I mean, this guy is just on another planet. He's not even from the same galaxy. But Savage is, again, I think similar to Austin in that he could cut a promo on you when he really didn't like you. Now, when Ric Flair went around telling people that Savage's wife was with him before she was with Randy, and he was threatening to show, you know, objectionable photos of Elizabeth, and even after their match at WrestleMania 8, when Savage already beat Flair for the title, and then, of course, all that stuff happened after the match where Flair laid a wet one on Elizabeth, and Savage attacked him and got beaten down by Flair and Mr. Perfect. And Savage is backstage being interviewed with the title, limping on one leg, being interviewed by Gene Okerlund. And go back and watch that promo, because that is an intense, passionate promo. This guy, you honestly believe in your heart of hearts, he doesn't even care about the championship belt on his shoulder is completely inconsequential. In fact, he even takes the title, hands it to Elizabeth, and tells her to leave with it. And then he turns back to the camera and proceeds to talk about Ric Flair in a tone of voice that you have to believe if Flair was standing there in front of him, he would kill him on the spot. I mean, this is a man that was out for blood. He was out to kill somebody. You know, when Jake Roberts slapped Elizabeth in the face, Savage was backstage at that Tuesday in Texas show cutting a promo, which, you know, it was almost too over the top, but almost, not quite. Like, it was still almost a perfect promo. He couldn't believe that he allowed his wife to be put in a position to be physically harmed in some way by this man. Savage literally crumbled. I mean, he crumbled, physically crumbled to the ground during the promo. I mean, he couldn't forgive himself for doing this. And he threatened bodily harm to Jake Roberts. And again, you thought, holy shit. When this guy gets his hands on Jake the Snake, there will be no Jake the Snake anymore. Savage could just bring you into these promos like very few people could. And so if I had to compare all three of them and pick, you know, who would have the edge one over the other, it's an impossible question to answer. Because in their own ways, those are three of the very best promo guys that the wrestling business has ever seen. If you put a top 10 list together, these three guys would be on it without question. And to say that one is better than the other would be subjective, but you know, it's like asking if you could have one night of passion, unbridled passion with you know, Brooklyn Decker, Angelina Jolie, or Selena Gomez, who would you pick? And those three names just I totally popped into my head just now. It's an impossible question to answer. I you know, you've got three fine choices there to choose from. If Justin Bieber can get Selena, I'm almost positive that I could. Matt from Wisconsin writes in, while listening to Sound Off 163 about Chris Hero not being in WWE, I have the same question about Christopher Daniels. He's a great performer and could probably kick John Cena's ass on a regular basis. You do know it's a work, right? Anyway, plain and simple, he's too small. I remember there being some discussion reading about how some of the people behind the scenes on the creative team, his name was floated around once before, and there just wasn't any interest, primarily because he is not, 6'2", 220 pounds. It sucks, but that's the way it is. Got two more quick stories here from those of you on how you became fans of professional wrestling. This one comes from Jess, who writes in. He says, before I start, I've been a fan of the podcast since episode 88. What got me to be a wrestling fan was really a strange one. Before I started watching, I seldomly heard the name Hulk Hogan from several of my classmates. Then I watched my very first wrestling show, Clash of the Champions, August 28th, 1994, where the main event was WCW champion Hulk Hogan going up against Ric Flair. At the time, I had never heard of WCW or WWF, so every wrestling show I watched, I was looking for Hulk Hogan, which obviously I was watching WWF programming at the time before I knew it. Then the debut of WCW Monday Nitro came, and I became a big fan from then on. Keep up the good work. I'm very glad that this topic was brought up on the podcast. Well, thank you for that. And the other story here comes from Cesar Gutierrez from El Paso, Texas. I clearly remember when I started watching wrestling. It was at a time when Bret Hart fought the British Bulldog at Wembley Stadium. That was 1992. I also vividly remember how scared I would get from Papa Shango. I remember going to my neighbor's house all the time because he had one of those black boxes that were great. From that time on, I've been a diehard wrestling fan. Now I have a 6-year-old son named Brandon, and I have showed him wrestling. He loves it as much as I do. And it's been a great bonding experience for the both of us. By the way, he hates John Cena and is a heel kid who loves Alberto Del Rio and Sheamus. I am so proud of him. Love your show. Been listening since episode 65. Keep up the good work. That is a smart boy that you have there, Cesar. Very smart. You've raised him well. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, and the like, you can email me, Solomonster@gmail.com. The email address is the same as always. It has not changed since the very beginning. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. I'm always posting updates on there. And, of course, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. Perhaps I may be posting more photos and videos from my phone and such as time goes on. So If I do, you better get on Facebook. It's the only way you're going to see it. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. And, of course, you can subscribe to this very show through iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. It should come right up and have the episodes delivered directly to you without you having to do anything. So, until next time, you have been listening to the fastest 60 minutes in all of sports entertainment audio. This is The Sound Off. I am The Solomonster. Until next time, be well, stay safe, make it a good week, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.